This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Scott Daly, who's the Director of the Security Operations Center for the Americas region of NTT Security.
My job as the Director of our Security Operations Center for the Americas region is to ensure the day-to-day delivery of our service offerings that we deliver out of the SOC. With vulnerability management, enterprise security monitoring, and with the threat detection services, just ensure that we're staffed up, I ensure that the people are trained correctly, that any escalations are handled, and that we're providing a quality product back to the client in the form of our alerting.
The industry's built up this sort of mystical view of what a SOC is. What is it?
There's really two answers to that question. A lot of people, when they think of a SOC, they think of an internal SOC to a company that is the center and the hub of all security activity. From an MSS perspective, a SOC is simply the group of professional analysts that are reviewing information out of a company's proprietary SIM technology. In our case, it's our legacy solution, ActiveGuard. Going forward, it's going to be Enterprise Security Monitoring Threat Detection. Our SOC, from that perspective, is simply the group of trained analysts from a global perspective that are offering global alerting through our platforms that we offer as a part of our service offering, our partnership offering. To further solidify it down, we're literally just the delivery arm providing that analytic support for the clients.
You mentioned there vulnerability detection and management, but you also mentioned SIEMs. With SIEMs, we rely heavily on rules. How much time do your team spend finding a vulnerability, building new rules, and then pushing them forwards to clients?
That is definitely a full-time job. We have an independent team within the overall SOC structure that is literally all they do. They're constantly mapping new signatures from vendors. There are always new CVEs coming out from the National Vulnerability Database. They're constantly mapping those and writing rules to alert on that activity to keep us current. Likewise, they're always updating the older signatures for the vulnerabilities that are several years old. But as new information comes out, they're constantly upkeeping that rule set to ensure that we're alerting properly for the right threat vector for the given vulnerability.
How much does this play into compliance for companies? Companies know they have to be compliant, not just around security, but other things. There's also a danger where we're starting to see people equate compliance to security, and of course they're not.
Obviously, compliance by itself does not mean a company is secure. What we try to do is we try to set the expectation with the client and have that conversation so that they know that from a compliance perspective, yes, the platform can deliver compliance in a very general sense, meaning that as we generate alerts and we write rules, they're specific to specific compliant requirements like PCI, for example. For different models within the PCI environment, we can write alerts that will generate based on that criteria. But by itself does not mean a compliant client is secure. That is a holistic conversation, and it involves a lot of different things like, are we watching the entire environment? Have they done a forensics engagement? Have we done a discovery scan? Are we able to do a vulnerability scan against them, or do they do vulnerability scans? Is that a credentialed scan? There are a lot of things that go into ensuring that a client is secure. Everybody that's been around this game for a while knows that just like defending a wall, you have to be watching everything all the time. All an attacker has to do is find one weakness one time. The other side of that is, what is a company's response to that? Within NTT Security, we offer a lot of different options, and one of those is incident response as part of our service portfolio. We always try to advocate to the clients that, yes, because you're compliant does not mean you're secure. Security means we need to be watching everything. You need to have a good defense in depth practice and stack, and you need to be ready to respond. If you're on the network and you're connected to other networks, you are going to get hit sooner or later. So you need to have the ability to respond, and we can help facilitate that.
How do we move customers away from this tick box over compliance? Because compliance is not simply a case of apply some rules. We need to know what's going on in the network. We need to understand what the compliance really means. We need to look at the systems to see if the systems can be compliant or where the weaknesses are. When you're engaging with clients, how many of them look for full engagement and how many of them are chasing tick box engagements these days?
Most clients that we deal with these days are looking for a full engagement. They want the full partnership. They want somebody that can give them good guidance to ensure that they're doing things the right way for the right reasons. Very few clients that we deal with these days are simply checkbox clients. They do exist. They will always exist out there. Just to put it bluntly, some companies care more about security than they do about just generating revenue. A good company, in our opinion, is a company that has got a good business model that generates revenue, but at the same time, they care as much or more about their clients' data than their clients do. What we do to try to get at that and really feel that out is a series of questions to get them to think. what is your risk tolerance? That's a good one. Not a lot of people or not a lot of organizations can answer that question. What is my risk tolerance? I don't know. What is my threat profile? I live in an industry that manufactures widgets. Is my technology up for grabs by maybe China or another threat acting country that's out there? We also ask a lot of questions about, do you know all the assets in your environment? When was the last time you did a full-on discovery scan? You wouldn't believe how many times even enterprise-level companies cannot answer that question because it's not sexy. Those are the things that are mundane at best that require a lot of effort and a lot of upkeep. But by asking these questions, we can really get the client into that mindset of, wow, I need to be paying attention to a lot more things. And ultimately what that relates into is the more information they can provide us, the better our service can be to help them either maintain their compliance, maintain their full-on security, or assist in response if and when an attack or a breach does happen.
You mentioned, what's your risk appetite? One of the challenges for a board in most organizations is they've seen cybersecurity as that black hole into which they pour money every single year. If this was a car fleet, they'd expect to change it this year and not hear another word for 3 years. Risk appetite is a word the board understands. Are you finding that the C-suite is not only engaging, but that the language of engagement is beginning to move away from vulnerability, breach, into this is risk?
Yes, we've seen a definite change in the last couple of years. Every year, every time we engage with clients, the language gets better. The conversations get a lot smarter. Most of the old school C-suite executives did see it exactly that. They saw security as a black hole. I'm not getting any return on my investment. It's a cost center. These days, most C-level executives, especially the CISOs and the CIOs in a lot of organizations, completely understand that it is an insurance policy. I need to pay my premium on my insurance policy so that when I wreck my car, they pay out. The same is almost true with this in the sense that having a good cybersecurity posture is a good security policy. The way we relate risk to CISOs that maybe don't want to hear about it is, look, would you rather spend $300,000 on security, or would you rather spend $1 million in a breach and have to suffer the brand damage of getting it reported on the national news? Nobody wants that. That levels very clearly with the C-suites at a lot of companies, because the last thing they want is to have to explain to either their board or their shareholders or their owners, depending on the company they are, that, yeah, we could have prevented this, but we didn't think it was reasonable to do at the time. That's a very, very difficult conversation to have.
One of the advantages of being a SOC, of course, is you have a lot of tools they won't have. But for those tools to be effective, you need information. When it comes down to gaining access to log files, integrating APIs so that you can see what's going on in systems, is there a greater awareness of what needs to be shared with a provider, or are customers still very nervous about letting this data offsite?
We kind of see it both ways. We still have a lot of clients that maintain, I'm just using you for security. You don't need to see everything. Not fully understanding the fact that security has to see everything that it possibly can so we can help understand what that risk profile is and alert appropriately. Likewise, we see a lot of clients that fully understand that we need as much access as possible, and that is a part of the conversation. But either way, with both types of clients, we approach that by simply asking a series of questions. If you just want us to monitor your external world-facing, internet-facing web servers, that's great. We can do that. But the level of service and the context around the alerts is going to be limited if we can't see how the traffic is flowing to your server and out of it. More often than not, most of the clients get it, and they understand that providing logs, providing access is a necessary partnership. That's how we tie it all together. We're your security partner. We're not somebody you're just offloading this to. We want to partner with you for multiple years, as long as we can, and the more information you're able to share with us, the better we're able to help you.
If we think about only looking at the outside, that means that around about 80 to 90% of incidents which come about as an insider are going to be missed. And of those incidents, very few are actually malicious. A lot of them are a user accidentally clicking on something. How easy is it to get that message across to organizations? Because when they look at the press, when they listen to podcasts, when they look at the news, everything they hear is malicious, when actually we are overlooking the accidental breach.
It's pretty difficult, to be honest with you. When we're talking to the CISOs, they're the C-suite executives that really get it because they are security-minded. But when talking to a CIO or talking to a CEO or talking maybe to a director of IT operations, it's very difficult for them to understand and much less admit to the fact that their biggest threat is their user base. It's almost a cultural thing like, no, there's nothing wrong with my organization. You hear that quite a bit. My users would never do that. We do security awareness training once a year. That's great, but let's be realistic. A lot of the breaches that you see out there in the wild, you see the end result that a threat actor was able to exfil. In case of the Marriott breach that just came about, they had access to the database for years. What you hardly ever hear about, though, or what people don't pay attention to is how they got their access. More often than not, it's exactly as you described. They send a spear phishing email and get somebody to click on a link. That downloads malware. Boom, they got a foothold. Or the best practices aren't being utilized, or users are careless with their password structure in a whole bunch of different ways. And again, it goes right back to, on the defense side, you have to be watching all the details all the time. And all a threat actor has to do is to catch you slipping once. With the user base, they're the easiest target. Another piece to this, it's always a very interesting conversation to have, is a lot of the C-level executives are the biggest target, and they don't even realize it because of the way that hierarchy is set up and you're brought up from a very young age that the boss is the boss is the boss. It's very difficult for an internal IT director or a CISO to have the conversation to say that, hey, you guys are the biggest vulnerable people that we have in this company, and you're going to be the biggest target. Therefore, you have to be more diligent than everybody else. That's a very, very difficult conversation to have, and we still see a lot of organizations that, quite frankly, don't understand it or outright refuse to admit to it.
One of the challenges of spotting a breach is knowing when data is being taken. There seems to be some strange belief out there that we should be able to spot large files leaving the business because exfiltration is always going to be a large data dump. The truth is that it isn't, and an awful lot of data is encrypted these days. How do you engage with clients? How do they engage with you when it comes to this problem of, well, the data's encrypted. Why do you think I can see it?
We get this question quite a bit, to be honest with you. We have to have the same types of conversations to say, look, it's not going to be 8 gig outbound traffic set. It's going to be a series of maybe 5 meg. They're going to hide it with the day-to-day web browsing of the employee base or with an email exchange. The conversation always goes back to visibility. We need visibility everywhere in the network. And when it comes to the encrypted traffic going outbound, there's a lot of ways to mitigate this, but it does come at a price. The best way to mitigate a lot of these things is to basically install a self-signed cert on your edge device, primarily your firewall, so it can decrypt that traffic on the fly, log it, we'll see it, and we're able to see what's going on. But that is expensive. You have to upgrade hardware in a lot of cases to be able to handle that processing load. It's another administrative burden to know that you've got a cert on that firewall, and if that cert were to expire, it's not going to really decrypt anything anymore, and you lose that capability. So it is a conversation that we do have quite a bit, and it's something that a lot of clients find that it's not that big of a deal to do it, but it does take some preparation and some pre-planning to ensure that they can do it well.
We hear a lot about the cost of a breach, but we don't really have that conversation about the cost of making sure we don't have a breach. As you mentioned, for putting self-signed certs, there's a cost, there's a preparation factor. How many customers balk at the idea of spending money early, but don't necessarily think about what it's going to cost if they don't?
A large portion of clients definitely think that way. We've seen the change in the industry over the last, probably call it 3 to 4 years, where a lot of organizations are willing to spend the money now because they understand the risk, but a lot of organizations, the vast majority still exist out there that we're not going to pay for it unless something bad happens. And then, oh my gosh, why didn't you guys do anything to stop this? Well, we tried to advocate for years, but you would never let us spend the money. So we see that more than we see the understanding level of clients that know that this game is expensive, know that IT security and cybersecurity is a day-to-day challenge and a grind, but we see the vast majority of the other.
Two things you mentioned early on that people wouldn't necessarily associate with SOC were incident response and forensics. How do they play?
Incident response and forensics come into play with a SOC in a variety of different ways. Primarily, incident response is simply responding to an event of interest. For example, if we're working an event under our services and we alert the client to say, this is bad, you have an active infection, that will kick off an incident response. An incident response comes in a lot of different flavors, but primarily, from our purpose, we are assisting the incident response activities as much as we can. If need be, we'll run the incident for the client if they don't have the expertise to. If they have an incident response team, we will be on the phone and assisting them.
How many clients embed you in, though? Because I look at a lot of incident resource planning, and if we're lucky, the C-suite are engaged from the start. If we're really lucky, those external agencies such as public relations and reputation management are engaged from the start. But in most cases, there's a bit of headless chicken run around, what can we do to try and solve this and not have the company embarrassed?
We actually are very good at that. The vast majority of the clients that have had incidents under our care call us immediately. We are a part of their initial incident triage. We're there to assist them. And we're able to do that because in our sales cycle, we ask and make very clear that we are your security partner. We are here to help. We're not going to release any of this information. We can't. It's under contract. We would get sued and get fined, all that good stuff. We've actually had a very good experience here in the Americas region with being part of the first level of response for a client incident. There are occasions, obviously, where it'll be a couple of days later, and we have to come in kind of blind and help out where we can. But more often than not, we do see clients engage us early on. So that's a nice change.
If we think about forensics, one of the reasons we're not seeing a lot of court cases is by the time IT's responded and they've panicked and they've tried to deal with stuff, they've destroyed any evidence we can get. Are customers beginning to make a greater forensics investment, or are they making a greater engagement with you in order to say, look, when it goes wrong, how do we get the stuff to prosecute?
We're seeing a lot more customers engage with us for forensics. So forensics within IT is a very niche type of engagement. Not a lot of people are very good or even have the experience to do forensics. It's very much one of those things that is very hard to come by, somebody with the knowledge, skill, and ability to do so. So we're seeing companies recognize that forensics is absolutely a critical piece to this, but it goes along with maturity. They'll engage with us to do the forensics, and we will come in and assist them with that. One of the biggest things we tell them is, look, as you're trying to figure out what's going on, engage our forensics team now so they can begin their forensics as we're mitigating the incident. Because as you said, by the time the IT security staff has gone around and made a bunch of changes to mitigate things, they've basically overridden all of the forensics capability to figure out how the toehold got there in the first place. So it's definitely something that we've seen a lot more engagement with us. Typically, you don't see clients have their own forensics capability unless they are a fairly mature organization and a large organization, to be honest with you, because it is expensive.
If we look at client platforms at the moment, everybody used to be all on premises. Then they moved out to a cloud. Now, we don't know where they are. They've got 5, 10, 15 clouds because different business units have bought a cloud application. How complicated does that make it when you're engaging with a client to provide them with security services to first of all find out where everything is?
It makes it very difficult for us. We have a consulting arm whose sole mission in life is to assist in those conversations. Obviously, the bigger the client, the bigger the footprint, and even small clients can get very complex very quickly if they do not have a consolidated strategic cloud plan. If it's just by the seat of their pants, it gets very confusing. We get by at that with our consulting team, who is very experienced in cloud and very experienced in the architecture of solutions. At the end of the day, to us, it's a log source. Where it lives from a SOC perspective matters in context for the event, but as far as getting the logs to us, it can be really anywhere. Definitely as a consulting engagement, definitely as a series of very in-depth conversations and mapping exercises and discovery exercises, we help the client. And almost every single time, we help the client understand something about their environment that they did not know.
As you look forward over the next year, what are the big challenges you're expecting to have to face?
The biggest challenges we're going to face in the next year is deliver consistency of service under our different platforms. We're rolling into GMSSP version 2, and that is a very, very large launch. We have multiple countries in play, multiple regions in play. So that continuity of service between region is going to be very, very key and a very big heavy lifting challenge for us to make sure that is available. The platform is designed to have that same delivery of service. It's ensuring that the operations teams are ready to go and ensuring that the handover between regions, such as it will be, is seamless and clean. At the end of the day, we are going to do everything we can to make sure that there is absolutely zero gap in coverage for the clients from a monitoring standpoint and a human standpoint, and make sure that the clients are able to get contact with us same as they would today and get a response immediately same as they're used to today. So those over the next year or so are probably some of the biggest challenges we're going to face, but we have a very, very good team in play. We have a very good management team in play to help us guide the ship through these waters. I'm very confident that we'll be able to get there. It's just going to be a lot of work.
Sounds like a very busy 12 months. Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.